Pseudopod, episode 99, July 18th, 2008. This week's story, Photo Finish, by Adam Laruzic. Hi, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair Stewart, and this week's story comes to us from Adam Laruzic. It originally appeared in Alien Skin Online magazine in 2005, and Adam's other work, including both short fiction and poetry, has appeared in On Spec, Neo-Opsis, and others. Your narrator this week is the magnificent Cheyenne Wright, a superb artist and writer whose work can be found at arcanetimes.com. So run, shoot, and hope you get the scoop, because I have a story for you, and it's true enough to hit the front page.
Photo Finish by Adam Laruzic. A painful kick to my shin woke me. Squinting against the hard fluorescence in the office, I bleared up to see Kim holding out my hat and coat. "Come on, Jerry, it's showtime. Let's ride," she said. The police scanner sputtered with a kind of staccato dialogue that indicated something big was happening. I leaned forward and cranked the volume, bowling over a collection of styrofoam coffee cups in the process. 1047, we're going to need more units," the scanner blurted. "Hostage. Cruz is headed to the area like swarm and wasps. Every other newsbeat in the town monitored the police bandwidth, and I bet they're going to be clamoring at the bit for this one. We had to get there fast." "What's going on?" I asked, accepting the hat and coat, forcing myself awake. "In the car," she said. "Hang on," I said, but she didn't. Grabbing my camera bag and checking my battery supply, I took off after her. "Bank heist. Two guys have a hostage and they're heading north on Portage. They want a helicopter standing by at the port," Kim informed me as I unlocked the passenger door for her on my Tercel. She hated it when I did that, holding doors open for her and stuff. She climbed in, all feisty 5'2" of her, brushing aside a lonely Dorito on the passenger seat. Wouldn't want to stain her sharp power suit. Kim was a green reporter, and that didn't help my odds of getting any primo snapshots for tomorrow's early. She was some rad femme with a degree who spent the last 4 years writing for a campus socialist rag about the inequities of the women in El Salvador, or capitalism as the great oppressor, or whatever. I was going to dump her as soon as I got there anyway. Let her find her own story. I had to get close to get a good snap. All these new reporters had their fancy university degrees. The way she talked, you'd think she was some kind of international political correspondent. This was the city beat, for Christ's sake. Scandal, sex, and murder. That's what the editor wanted. Get all three and it would be a banner edition the next day. Kim was tuning to the all-news radio station. Good. At least she was learning something. CKLW had a live report from a reporter on the scene. It was Mueller, another old hack like me. "The vehicle is moving quite slowly along Portage under a heavy police escort. The police are keeping their distance, though. The name of the hostage has not been released. However, a young blonde woman can be seen at the back of the passenger window. There's quite a crowd along Portage now trying to get a look at the two abductors. Apparently, the pair have been smiling and waving to the throng. The police are deploying barricades to..." "Great, it's already a circus," I said, lighting up a smoke and getting the look from Miss Healthnut. "Every rubbernecker from 50 blocks around is going to be gawking, snapping amateur photos. Have to hand it to Mueller, though. Nice touch about the young blonde woman. That'll keep him tuned." I tried to teach Kim that, to use the magic phrases like partially clad body, sex slang, young blonde woman. But she wouldn't have any of it. Exploitative, she called it. No shit. People that read our tabloid didn't want news. They wanted to be entertained. They wanted to be stoked to righteous ire, to shudder with gruesome fascination. It was the morning paper. People were too tired to think. They wanted to be told what to think. I mean, take that child prostitution expose. Kim did a hell of a job on that. By the time you finished reading it, you wanted to hang every child molesting John from the nearest pole. But then there was my photo. It was this cute little redhead, 15, 16, caught in just the right light under a street lamp. The picture was from behind, neck down, lustrous hair, straight down her back, tight little butt and red hot pants, long silky legs on 4-inch heels. That picture made every male from 9 to 90 pop one. Tiki, the ad, put it in a full front page, color, under the banner, Children of the Night. It was a huge seller. The irony made me laugh. It made Kim cry. I pulled into Portage Avenue through the night drizzle. The street shone like black metal under the lamps and spotlights. What a scene. Gawkers shouting, perky TV reporters waving microphones, radios crackling from open cop car windows. Some kind of news scrim was happening, and I got rid of Kim there. I flashed something that vaguely looked like a badge at the perimeter security, and the overexcited cop waved me through into the cordoned-off command area. Take away the bald spot and the gray hair, which my fedora hid anyway, and I looked a little like Columbo. Did wonders for dealing with the cops. It was easy to find a quiet, dark space on the street to wait. The cavalcade was still a couple of hundred yards down, so I busied myself checking my f-stops and flash. I lit up a smoke and waited, crouched by a wooden barrier. After about a dozen cop cars with lights flashing came crawling by, I saw the car with the hostage, a black BMW. The driver, dark, swarthy guy, had a black wool cap on. I could see the blonde, her head leaning against the window. Next to her was another blonde, good-looking guy, photogenic, who could have used a shave. He was pointing a handgun at the woman's head. I snapped off a few shots, but my hopes weren't too high because of the glare from the vehicle windows. And as the Beamer rolled by me, I stepped out. It blew my cover, but all I needed was time for a couple of shots. I heard a loud voice behind me, presumably a cop hollering at me. As I bent to snap the shots, the car slowed to a halt. Time started to move real slow for me at that point. The black passenger window slid down, electrically smooth. The photogenic blonde guy leaned forward to the window, his gun, sleek and black, resting on the windowsill. The woman was dead still. "Hey, buddy, got a smoke?" the man asked, smiling. It took a second for the question to register. For some reason, I wasn't scared. The gun wasn't pointing at me. Hell, the guy was downright friendly. "Better make it two, actually," he prompted. Still all smiles. "Sure, I'll trade you for a couple of snapshots," I said, the idea dawning on me as I spoke the words. "Okay, why not?" he said, waving the gun almost carelessly. It occurred to me that I might be able to grab the guy's piece, but I didn't for a number of reasons. Self-preservation, certainly. Plus, I wanted this photo. But I think the biggest reason was that he seemed so friendly, and there were so many cops crawling all over the place, I didn't think there was any way the woman could get hurt. I threw him the whole pack of smokes and fumbled with my camera while he lit one up. He threw his arm around the woman nonchalantly and posed. "Come on, smile, baby," I heard him say to her gently. As she turned her face to me, I leaned in real close and snapped off about a half dozen shots. Good shots. "Thanks, man," he said, holding up the smokes, giving me a wink. I couldn't believe my luck. The window slid up and the car rolled off again. Well, the shit flew. I had a lot of cops pissed off at me. I gave them the old, just doing my job routine. Hell, it was true. They knew it. I knew it. Less than an hour later, I was hauling ass back to the office. Kim could catch a cab or something. I needed these prints. I threw the camera card to Joey, the graphics kid, told him that I needed them pronto. I was pacing around my desk restlessly, waiting for the dimwit Joey to finish developing, when I heard the news about the shootout. The cops had made their move, like they always do eventually. I guess the two outlaws decided to go out shooting. They were both dead. Mr. Photogenic's last act as a human being was to put a bullet in the woman's head, just for spite. Her name had been Sarah Giles. Shit, I'd missed all that. Still, if my pictures turned out like I hoped, I was sitting on a gold mine. Finally, Joey handed me my photo printout. I grabbed the photos off of him, my eyes riveted to the one on top of the pile. It was beautiful. The blonde guy was leaning back with his smoke, smiling with twinkling eyes, all at ease with the world. But it was the woman in the forefront, the haunted look in her big doe eyes, slack features, the look of utter despair. I don't know how to explain it. If I did, I'd be a writer. Let's just say that if a picture's worth a thousand words, this one was worth a million. I flipped to the next shot. It was almost the same. Wait a minute. It was the same. I shuffled through all the prints. Every one. Exactly the same. "What the hell is this, Joey? They're all the same." "I don't know," he said. What do you mean, I don't know? I barked, starting to lose it. Those shots were worth a fucking mint, and you botched it.
I didn't botch it. Trick the JPEGs yourself, you moron, Joey said, prodded out of his usual stupor.
I was going to get this little bastard fired, that was for sure. He was right, the files would tell, but I was still going to get his ass canned. I stared at the prince in disbelief. Every shot was identical. The guy leaning back with his smoke, the woman with that plaintive look.
I don't get it. How can every picture be exactly the same? It doesn't make sense. Bullshit digital cameras.
I don't know, said Joey, obviously more interested in his fingernails than this imponderable.
Stupid fuck, I grumbled as I stormed off.
The photo ran the next day. Full front page, color, under the caption, innocent victim. Hell, I even got mentioned in the story. Sun photographer Jerry Losick snapped this incredible photograph moments before the killing. Tiki, the city editor, was ecstatic. Word was out that time and people were bidding for the photo. Even the networks had called. I was a shoo-in for a Journalism Society award. One of the guys said it was the best photo he'd ever seen. Kim ruined the party, running off in a hissy fit because Tiki had edited her story to make it more titillating.
Doesn't anyone care that she's dead?
She cried. Well, yeah, but I didn't shoot her. Me, I was already sick of the damn photo. It glared at me from every newsstand, every TV. Each nuance of it burned into my memory. The way the guy held his cigarette. The tendrils of silver smoke against the black interior. The wisp of a hair hanging just out of place. But most of all, those eyes. Like a wounded animal. Pleading. The picture was too good. People would stare at it for long minutes. The hurt of it bled through the page. It pulled you into it. It overpowered you. After a while, I wouldn't even look at it anymore. I started to see Sarah all over, in the brief reflection of a billboard from a store window, standing near the dairy shelf of the supermarket. Even a dead face floating across my vision when I closed my eyes. A bullet hole in her forehead emanating a ghastly purple light. And every time I thought of those photos, how they were all the same, it was like I felt the world tilting and I had to grab on to something solid. Tiki wanted an interview with Sarah's fiancé to keep the story going for the next day. He wanted me to tag along to get a shot. I wouldn't be going with Kim, though, Tiki assured me. She'd quit. I begged off, feigning exhaustion. It wasn't too far from the truth. I retired to Clancy's for a couple of beers. The boys slapped me on the back, and every time I looked up, someone had bought a round for me. I wasn't in the mood. I tried playing the part, but every damn TV in the bar was showing the photo. I couldn't get away from it. I'd had too many beers, and the place was starting to do a tilt-a-whirl. The photo filled the giant screen TV in the bar.
This is the famous last photograph of Sarah taken while she was alive, as she was held prisoner for 3 hours in the car. Sarah was engaged to be married in 2 weeks. Now her fiancé is preparing for her funeral. Sarah Giles, brutally, senselessly murdered at 23.
Intoned the narrator, some Anderson Cooper wannabe. The eyes. I felt the noise of the bar slip away into a mesmerizing drone, as her larger-than-life eyes stared at me. Drew me in. Not staring at me. Staring into me. That lost, haunted look wasn't meant for the camera. The world. It was for me. You could have saved me. An intimate whisper. I swung around and there she was. Sarah. She stood there. 3 feet in front of my stool at Clancy's bar. I fought to maintain control. But my booze-addled head was swimming.
What? I said.
You could have helped me. You just eyed me up like some rack of lamb.
There was nothing I could do.
Nothing but freeze my naked fear and pain for the whole world to see. Nothing but give my killer a pack of cigarettes and kiss his ass for the opportunity to exploit my suffering. Bastard.
Fuck you, I was doing my job, I said.
She slapped me hard across my cheek. Pain, galvanizing in its sharpness.
Liar, she said. I was going to let some apparition destroy my life. I reached out with my hands to see if she was real, and felt immensely smug when I felt the resistance of her neck as I wrapped my fingers around it. There was nothing I could do! There was nothing I could do! I screamed at her. Her face was mottled and darkening. I felt hands grabbing me, several hands pulling me back. My shoulder blade hit the bar. The agony of it slicing through the alcoholic numbness like a razor through the dark. A punch came hard in my nose. I felt the snap of cartilage and the copper taste of blood in my sinuses dripping into the back of my throat. I opened my eyes. The woman was just getting up. It was Kim. Kim. Not Sarah. Looking at me as if I were a wild animal. I suppose I was. Tiki suggested a few days off.
Should be grateful Kim's not going to press charges, he told me.
A few days turned into a couple of weeks. I was flicking idly with the remote control. Found an old episode of Bewitched. Don't you think that Elizabeth Montgomery looks a little like Sarah?
No.
No, she doesn't. Concentrate on the show. Something about Darren bringing home the boss and his wife for dinner. Concentrate. What's happening? I took another huge mouthful of coffee. The caffeine doses I was taking made my hands jittery. Made it hard to concentrate. I hadn't slept for 3 nights. What with the photo waiting for me in my dreams. And that horrible, accusing face. Concentrate, I spat vehemently. Head and clawed hands. I'd forgotten already what I was supposed to be concentrating on. Anything but... I heard voices sometimes when I was awake. Whispers. Sarah whispering. Her face appeared in the folds of curtains. In the static white noise of 3 a.m. TV. Ghostly and whispering. Whispering. The phone rang, even as I stared at the unplugged phone cord laying impotently on the floor. I picked up the receiver.
Jerry, it's cold out here. So cold, she whispered.
I looked up and saw her naked corpse floating in front of my fifth-story window. Pulpy and blackening, but the cloudy eyes, so aware. The dry lips moving. I placed the receiver on the table and turned back to the TV.
Jerry,
the phone whispered. Looks like Samantha's mother had turned the boss's wife into a chihuahua, right at the dinner table. Ha 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 went the laugh track. It was mocking me. I listened to it closely, discerning each clap, each voice. Then I was falling and turning into the black. Images flashed before me. Fleeting glimpses that went by so quickly they left little color trails behind them. Disconnected snippets of voices echoed in my head.
Help me.
The street is lit like day under television lamps and roving spotlights as huge, enthusiastic crowds throng the streets, cheering on the car, the ticker tape thick as a snowstorm. Silence. As I look around, it's like I'm a human camera. Perceiving the scene as a series of snapshots and intersped with blinding white flashes. A child on his father's shoulders. Mouth open, laughing, hands in mid-clap. Snap flash. The light bars from the cop cars reflecting off the wet streets in ghostly crimson streaks. Snap flash. My eyes are shutters as I look around.
Help me.
A whisper. I turn my head to the car, which rolls almost silently to me. Snap flash. The blonde man's mouth is moving frame by frame. He's smiling. I remember. He's asking me for a smoke.
Please help me. He's going to kill me.
Sarah's lips aren't moving, but I can hear her voice. He's lighting his cigarette. Snap. As he raises the lighter. Flash. Snap. As he touches the tip of the flame to the cigarette. Flash. Snap. As he leans close to Sarah to say something. Flash.
Please do something. I know he's gonna kill me. You can reach his gun, can't you? Please. I'm so frightened.
It's like I'm reading her thoughts. Snap. Now the picture is there. The photo. Nothing moves.
blonde guy's twinkling eyes, frozen forever. Not twinkling with joie de vivre, as I thought, but with sheer malice. The easy smile was an evil smirk. Killer's arm slung around Sarah's shoulder, obscenely intimate. Sarah's face, Sarah's eyes looking at me, through me, into me. Not just fear in her eyes, something else. Horror at the whole spectacle. Revulsion at my petty ambition. Resignation. As a virgin sacrificed in the altar before the bloodthirsty crowd. You might have saved me, she whispers. Not regret, just matter of fact. Help me. The eyes, so still. They burned me. I wanted to move. I wanted desperately to go to the next snapshot. But I know I'm frozen in this moment of time for all eternity. I like Sarah.
Photojournalists are a fascinating breed, and how you feel about them depends a lot of the time on which side of the camera you find yourself on. Paparazzi has become a dirty word, synonymous with reptilian celebrity cults and the death of Princess Diana, at least on this side of the pond. But the right image, in the right place, has inconceivable power. Ouija, the legendary crime scene photographer who was named, by the way, after a Ouija board because of his supernatural ability to get to a scene just as something had happened, took images of incredible power and went on to become a cinematographer, even working on Dr. Strangelove. David Douglas Duncan's work is similarly iconic, and more recently the combat photography of Russell Kleeker and his compatriots has thrown light on the quiet, personal, almost intimate moments even frontline soldiers can grab. In the end, a photograph is a slice of time, a memory in amber, and if it's the right memory, it has incredible power. Tom Junod's picture, The Falling Man, has become, for some people, something close to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and for others, an embodiment of all the horror of September the 11th, for example. Closer to home, and on a much, much smaller scale, the best personal photos, certainly the best wedding photos, are the ones that are taken when no one's looking, the ones that are, once again, a slice of time. To put it another way, a picture really does say 1,000 words, but what people tend to forget is sometimes those words may not be ones you want to hear. Pseudopod, while sponsored, relies on you to pay its authors. Some bright, shiny day will be self-sustaining, but in the meantime, like Newt and Aliens, we're scrappy, but we could do with some help. So if you like this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. I promise you every author, who mostly come out at night, by the way, mostly, appreciates it. Pseudopod is staffed by Ninja. Seriously, we never see them. We just get loads of little post-it notes. The editor Ninja works through Ben Phillips and leaves red post-it notes for him. The hoster Ninja works through me and leaves green post-it notes for me. And the slush pile reader Ninja works through Ellen Allen and leaves blue post-it notes for her. Oh, they also occasionally leave the odd dead body or two. But hey, they are Ninja. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod wants to know how you want to go out, on your feet or on your knees.